and Adrian Broaddus.
All right, welcome back, everybody, as we get going here on a Wednesday edition of the program. And been a tough day in sports, tough day around El Paso. Anyway, just with the Ritos of fires and everything that's happening, to our... You think about that to our neighbors in Ruidoso and in Alto and New Mexico. In fact, I was looking at the article that was put together on the Kiss El Paso website from Iris, and I feel like that's a good place for us to start because... she put up an article that says, here's how to help Ruidoso, New Mexico residents during the wildfires. And you think about it, Highway 48 is closed, Highway 70 at Apache Summit is closed. So the only way to get out is Sudearth to Highway 70 in Roswell. It's the only way to get out. So it's a really, really bad situation. In fact, those live videos that they were showing was just frightening. Iris writes, the needed items right now more than anything are non-perishable foods, bottled water, baby supplies, dog and cat food, clothing, blankets, and toiletries. And they do have drop-off locations in Socorro. They also have probation and parole offices in southern New Mexico, Cruces, Alamogordo, Deming, TRC, and Roswell as well. There are also online donations. Monetary donations can be made to the Community Foundation of Southern New Mexico. And Mescalero has even set up a GoFundMe for fire relief for the Mescalero Apache tribe. So this is a very, very scary, serious situation. The videos of watching the wildfires burning are just surreal more than anything else. So hopefully this, will not get any worse. I mean, if you think about it, I don't know if you saw the videos of Alto and watching the Alto, I think it was the Alto ski shop burn. And, realizing also that all the horses from Ruidoso Downs have been transported out. Some are here. Some are going to other areas. And then there are those where, the animals didn't make it out. You think about just the wildlife when you're out in Ruidoso, the deer and all the wildlife that's wandering around. And those fires spread so fast and they were so vicious that, when they have to tally this up, I mean, we're talking years until the smoke will clear and everything will happen. It's just, it's horrible. There's no other way to put it.
Yeah, and it's extra horrible for us here in El Paso because, other cities, maybe if you're on the East Coast, West Coast, you got a beach town or you got a lake town or something like that. Well, we've got a mountain town, and it's Ruidoso. And, we attach ourselves to that community, that city all the time. We have friends who have cabins. We have friends who have spots up there, land up there, whatever it might be. Or the friends who we've made up there in Ruidoso, and all the great business owners up there. We've got great listening audience up there too. People love, to mention that they've heard us on Sports Talk whenever we make the trip up there for the Camp Ruidoso, for UTEP football, and when they've done that in the past. So my heart hurts, man. I'm sad about this. This is really tough because I love making trips up there to Ruidoso.
We broadcasted live from Ruidoso Downs, stayed there for years and years. In fact, over the years, I've looked at trying to get a getaway spot, another place that we can enjoy. So I know exactly what you're talking about, and there's a lot of people out there that have either retired to Ruidoso or plan on retiring out to Ruidoso. And that's also the scariest thing to me is that fires can happen whenever because you're out really in the forest. You could be asleep. And something happens and something burns. And that's just, it's beyond scary.
That it really is, man. I can't imagine what these people who were there day to day had to deal with. Just packing up whatever they could, you know, at the drop of a hat, and then having to move or at least deal with some uncertainty here during this process. So, you know, if you're able to out there, if our listeners considering donating, considering helping out, they have resources online. They have resources here in the city of Socorro where they're taking donations and drop offs and stuff like that. So that's definitely the way that we can help, and man, it's just so tragic to see this happen.
If you go to our website at 600ESPNElPaso.com, Iris's article about how to assist is up right now. In fact, she's got a couple of articles about a city in Texas offering to help the Ruidoso fire victims, and as she mentioned, how to assist residents affected by the wildfires and all the people that have been displaced. So yeah, it's a somber way to start things off, and it's not going to get any easier sports-wise. We learned that Willie Mays passed away yesterday at the age of 93. Now, let's be honest. Anybody who lives to 93, you're thinking, wow, it's an amazing life. But Willie was one of those people we thought would live forever because, you know, the legend grew and grew. And granted, really since, you know, people like, you know, Joe DiMaggio and you know, you could say so many of them, but I go Joe DiMaggio, I go Mickey Mantle, as of late Hank Aaron. I mean, for quite a while, Willie has been considered the greatest living baseball player, and even with some of the other peers that have passed on that are also in the Hall of Fame, Willie's been for many years considered the greatest living player. Probably maybe after Ted Williams passed away, Willie Mays kind of assumed that role. So we lost Willie at the age of 93, just a couple of days before the game coming up in Birmingham. And, you know, we found out he wasn't going to be able to make it. And then we hear the news that that he passed away yesterday evening. It actually broke right after we got off the air. I mean, minutes after we finished the show yesterday at 6:30, that's when news of Willie Mays' passing first started to really take over the sports wire. And, man, what a life. What a ball player. You know, what a legacy Willie Mays leaves behind, as the Say Hey Kid.
Yeah, what a year, man, because 2024, unfortunately, we've lost some of the greats. Bill Walton, Jerry West, now Say Hey Kid. I saw John Teicher write that yesterday on Twitter at X, and I was thinking to myself, it's so true. I mean, just in a recent stretch right here, we've really lost some of the icons in these sports, but specifically with Willie Mays, man, just somebody who is larger than the sport itself, right? What he meant on and off the field, what he meant to that Giants organization, who he was with for so long, and you know how much of a staple he made with that group. You know, the two NL MVP awards, 12 gold gloves. It's unfair to just talk GOAT conversations, but he is in that conversation right there. Willie Mays being one of the greatest of all time.
When you look at the newest stat to measure greatness, it's called WAR, wins above replacement. It means how many more wins does a team have because of this individual versus just a replacement-level player, meaning any average player? Willie is fifth all-time on that list. It's a great list. Like, if you ever open it up and just curious about you know, how that list goes, man, it is a star-studded group of players. In fact, I'm looking right now and giving you the list. Here it is, okay? Babe Ruth, Walter Johnson, Cy Young, Barry Bonds, Willie Mays, Ty Cobb, Henry Aaron, Roger Clemens, Tris Speaker, Honus Wagner.
That's where you start right there when you're talking about greatest players to ever play the sport right there. It's that list of 10. That's where you start. Maybe you add a couple others, but, man, what a list right there. And for Willie Mays to be number 5 on that list,
yep,
really impressive. Shows exactly the kind of impact he made to winning. He was a winning player, and that's what he did.
Yeah, that's right. That is right. So, you know, think about it. It's a big legacy he leaves behind. 23 years in the big leagues. Everybody's seen the catch in 1954 off Vic Wertz in the World Series that he made. And, you know, the Giants ended up winning the series in 54 that year. So that was a big one for him. As a rookie, he was on deck when Bobby Thompson hit the shot heard around the world. In fact, A few years ago, we had John Shea on with us, who wrote the definitive autobiography of Willie Mays. And I remember having John on and how proud he was of that book, told story after story. And, you know, that's truly one of the great books that we'll tell everybody about how the Say Hey Kid was.
You know, we tried our best. I mean, off air, this is something listeners don't know, but we really tried to get Willie Mays on this program multiple times. And so,
yep.
Don't know, you know, I think we were close and not necessarily a regret or anything, but it just shows you he's such an iconic guy, high in demand and hard to get, you know, somebody like that on the phone. But
no, it's true.
You know, something that we definitely tried to do here on this program.
Yeah, it's really the case. And again, remembering the life and times of Willie Mays. And by the way, Jay Jaffe will join us. A question I want to ask Jay next is simply this. With Willie Mays now gone, who is the greatest living baseball player?
Ooh, I love it. That's a great one right there.
It's really tough because the truth is there is no easy answer. Well, yeah, okay. If you want to simply go by his numbers, which are historic, let's be honest, what Barry Bonds did in his career from start to finish, nobody's ever going to do that again. Nobody. So, yes, if we measure Barry Bonds on his complete line of work, absolutely. Absolutely. But then you start to look at the other names out there, okay? And by the way, Roger Clemens is the pitching version practically of Barry Bonds. He really is. So, you know, as great a player as Barry Bonds was, so is Roger Clemens, and You could make the argument today. That's why they go hand in hand. You know, Clemens is the starting pitcher version of Barry Bonds. And then you got Alex Rodriguez, who also right in the middle of that same era, same controversy. So think about it, okay? Here are other names to consider. Cal Ripken Jr., Iron Man streak. Someone who, you know, went to over 20 All-Star games and was as class an act as you can get. Somebody else, Johnny Bench, the best, arguably the best all-around catcher in the history of the game. You know, Johnny Bench and Yogi Berra could be right up there, 1A, 1B. And Yogi's not around anymore. Bench is. You could put Bench in that conversation. Could you put Ken Griffey Jr. in that conversation? Griffey, who never had any steroid accusations or PEDs. In fact, you know, his body was banged up the last half of his career, probably because he didn't take anything. And all he did was age the way you're supposed to age. I mean, that was it. So, you know, you could put Griffey in that conversation.
Would you put, okay, I'm going maybe, this is maybe outside looking in, okay? Mike Schmidt, Albert Pujols, or
sure.
Randy Johnson. What do you think about those three?
Put them all in there. You could also put in Nolan Ryan, despite all the walks and losses. You could put him in there with his 7 no-hitters. You could put in Mariano Rivera because he was the most automatic closer in the history of the game.
That might be closer to my top 5.
You could also put in Sandy Koufax because even though Koufax only pitched 12 years, he was so dominant during his career. That's why I'm saying there is no easy answer for this particular question. None. Somebody might say years from now, Shohei Ohtani could be on that list.
I was going to say, can somebody right now predict like a Mookie Betts or something crazy like that? Or, you know, even Shohei. I love that idea.
Or Trout or anybody else. Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely right. By the way, there's going to be a lot of EAS updates today, a lot of National Weather Service updates. So our advice is, if you would like to listen to the show uninterrupted, listen to us on the app. The 600 ESPN El Paso app. And that way you're in the studio with us and you're, you know, don't have to worry about some of the other announcements that happen throughout the course of today's show. All right. Coming up next, Jay Jaffe. He'll join us. And then a little bit later, Jeff Erickson will join us. Oh, and by the way, look what I have here, guys. I've got a pair of tickets to give away to FC Juarez and Club America. Sunday, 7:30, out at the Sun Bowl.
Wow, those are hot tickets, Steve.
Alberto, look at this, man. Section 25, row 5, seats 5 and 6.
Those are good seats right there. They may go missing, so definitely keep your eyes on those because those are the good ones.
I want to thank Andrew Forrest for dropping these off with us today. Appreciate that, Andrew. So, yes, we will be giving away a pair of tickets during the show today to go see Los Bravos and Club America Sunday.
Man, those
Sun Bowl.
Those are hot commodities, man. Those are hot ones right there. I think a lot of people want these.
I agree. We'll let Alberto figure out how we're going to give these away today. But let's get Jay Jaffe on the phones right after Charlie One, who's standing by with this traffic update. Well, as you might imagine, it has been quite the 24 hours since word started to come out late yesterday that all-time great Willie Mays has passed away at the age of 93. You know, we normally get a chance to talk baseball and beer with Jay Jaffe and talk about all the big storylines. But Jay, as we welcome you back to the show from Fangraphs.com, this one is bigger than baseball. Willie Mays, just a giant in the sports community, an ambassador for the sport, and quite frankly, the greatest living ball player, now gone at the age of 93, leaving an unbelievable legacy behind him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you could put Willie Mays in the conversation for the greatest ball player of all time. I think it is fair to say the numbers, that both the legend and the numbers support the notion that he was the greatest all-around ball player when you take into account his defense and his base running. Just absolutely dominated the National League for more than a decade back when after he came out of the Army in 1954, helped the Giants win the World Series that year, made perhaps the most iconic defensive play in baseball history, racked up all kinds of tremendous statistics and just, you know, left people with their jaws on the floor, given just all the things he could do on the diamond, and just a remarkable presence. And, you know, he remained around the game well into his retirement and really was, like you said, was a great ambassador for the sport.
Well, he was, and a giant his whole career until the very end when he went back to New York and played for the Mets and was in that 73 World Series in which New York fell to Oakland. But ultimately, people talk about the highlight reel plays, the home run totals. And, of course, since he played the first 7 years of his career in the Polo Grounds, some always wonder, you know, how his home run totals might have been impacted had he, let's say, played at Ebbets Field, which would have had a much more homer-friendly park to hit his home runs in rather than that cavernous center field area out there at the Polo Grounds.
Yeah, well, you know, the Polo Grounds was also was less than 300 feet down the line, so it may have hurt him in some ways, it may have helped him in others. I think it's probably more fair to say that Candlestick Park, with its swirling winds and pitcher-friendly nature, probably cut into his home run total as well. But I think that when you account for that, and when you account for the fact that he lost nearly two full seasons to military service in 1952 and 1953. It's reasonable to suggest that he might have beaten Hank Aaron to the 700 home run plateau, and perhaps even to Babe Ruth's 714 homers. It's all, you know, it's all on the table there, I don't think it diminishes his legacy that he didn't get to those numbers. It is one of those fascinating baseball what ifs that we can ponder, you know, until eternity.
You know, it's funny, too, because I was looking at a former teammate of his, Willie McCovey, who also hit over 500 home runs for his career, 521, and like Mays, played, in Candlestick. So you're right. I mean, sometimes the wins don't really go into play, but when you realize that the Giants have had some of the best sluggers in the game over the years and they've been able to play in that ballpark for much of their career, there's something to really be said about that.
Yeah, I just, you know, just absolutely a tremendous hitter, tremendous base runner. Somebody said, I think he reached the 30 home run, 30 stolen base plateau a couple of times. And when that became popular to cite stats like that, he said, if I'd known it was going to be a big deal, I'd have done it every year. He certainly had the talent to do it. What's really interesting to hear, one of the things that's really interesting to me, is that Mays won only two most valuable player awards. He could have easily won another six or seven of them because he led the league in wins above replacement. I think it's like 10 times in a 13-year span. I mean, you know, if we'd had those numbers around back then, he could have been MVP year in, year out. He was dominating like Mike Trout or Babe Ruth even.
You know, he finished second twice in the MVP voting. He also finished third twice in the MVP voting. And, you know, always a couple of fourth place finishes. But you're right. You look at some of those numbers in the mid-50s, really when he was at his peak. And whether it was, you know, 1957, the last year that the Giants played in New York, he has 38 stolen bases to go along with 35 home runs, 97 RBIs, and a .333 batting average. Numbers that really backed up that play. The defensive value was terrific. And remember, when you're collecting Willie Mays baseball cards, wins above replacement wasn't a real stat. In fact, even OPS wasn't a real stat. You knew batting average, you know home runs, RBIs. You might have known on base and slugging, but for the most part, you know, those were the key numbers. And defensive value was never something that was really thought about much, even though he brought so much of that to the table.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting when you try to convince a skeptic that, you know, these defensive numbers that we have are accurate, or at least, you know, in the ballpark. One of the things I like to point out is that, you know, even our fairly rudimentary defensive stats for the pre-2000s era, when the more sophisticated defensive runs saved and ultimate zone rating were introduced, even without that, we have Willie Mays as the best defensive center fielder in value. Roberto Clemente is the best defensive right fielder in value. Brooks Robinson is the best third baseman. Ozzie Smith, just a couple runs outside of being the best shortstop. Things like that. I mean, it's like, well, you know, how many of those guys do you need to be number one before you start to take these metrics seriously on a career basis? And I think that this underscores just how, you know, how much of a better sense we have of Willie Mays with these advanced numbers. Not that you needed numbers to fully appreciate him, but I think it adds to our enjoyment.
Did you ever get a chance to meet Mays at all in the past?
Very, very briefly. In 1980, my older cousin, who I think is about 6 years older than me, passed along about 2,000 baseball cards to me. And I remember the year because I had a George Brett baseball card from his rookie season, the year that he was chasing 400 in 1980. But a couple years later, he showed up in Salt Lake City at a Smith grocery store expo down at the Salt Palace where the Utah Jazz used to play. And my mom took me down there, and I had a Mays 1973 Topps card showing him on the Mets. And I stood in line, I don't know, waited maybe 10 minutes or whatever, got to Mays, handed him the card. He wouldn't even make eye contact with me. I'm not even sure he was looking at the damn card when he signed it. You know, I still have the card. Nobody at the time would believe that the signature was authentic. They're just saying, yeah, your little brother just scribbled on it. But I do still have the card, and it's maybe not the most perfect memory of him, but it does stand as a reminder that you know, that I did meet him, and that was still something that I cherish.
More with Jay Jaffe as we continue here on Sports Talk. But first, let's go right back to Adrian standing by with this bottom of the hour Sports Center update.
Thank you very much, Steve. Let's go over to all the scores around Major League Baseball. Speaking of, let's go over to Atlanta. The Braves blanked the Tigers from earlier today. 7-0 was their win, happening much earlier. Also, the Pirates get it done at home. 1-0 finish against the Reds. Marlins squeezed past the Cardinals today. 4-3 was the finish out in Miami. Padres on the road defeated the Phillies 5-2. Cubs get it done at home against the Giants. 6-5 was the finish. and the Nationals with a two-run win against the Diamondbacks. 3-1 was the finish for that matchup. Going over to the top of the hour, it's the Orioles taking on the Yankees. 5:05, first pitch for that matchup. Also later tonight, Rangers hosting the Mets at 6:05. Astros squaring off against the White Sox in Chicago. 6:10, first pitch for that matchup. And then later tonight, 6:40 start between the Dodgers and the Rockies. Over to some more news today. Let's go over to this one out of the NBA. Tough news with the Detroit Pistons firing Monty Williams after just one season. They're going to have to absorb the remaining $65 million on its contract. That's right. The new president of basketball operations in Trajan Langdon, who was hired a month ago, has been meeting regularly with Monty Williams about the franchise's future, but the decision to dismiss Monty was directed from ownership, sources tell ESPN. Langdon delivered the news to Williams on Wednesday morning, and of course, now they have a search committee going off and trying to find the next head coach to try to lead the Detroit Pistons for next season. Let's look at your SportsCenter update. I'm Adrian Broaddus.
All right, Adrian, thank you very much. Again, Jay Jaffe from Fangraphs.com. He just held the chat, and we've been talking about Willie Mays, the great Willie Mays, here for the first part of our weekly segment. Now that Mays is no longer with us, I'm wondering about maybe who would be considered the greatest living baseball player. You know, you look at the numbers, Barry Bonds put together a career that almost looks like it's video game stats. And yet, even though he ranks above Willie on all-time wins above replacement, he's not yet in the Hall of Fame. It remains to be seen when that'll happen for him. Also for others like Roger Clemens, one of the greatest pitchers ever in the game. And of course, a little bit later on, Alex Rodriguez. We'll see what happens with him. So that brings us to Rickey Henderson, who is 19th on the all-time list of wins above replacement. And yet nobody really looks at Rickey Henderson as the all-time greatest living ball player. But because of his value defensively, what he did on the base paths, and how many years he played, and how he was a power hitter hitting in the leadoff spot, Jay, could there be an argument made that Rickey Henderson could be the greatest living ball player from the non-steroid PED players?
I think you could make that argument. I think you'd have to couch that as sort of as I did when I made the argument for Mays himself as, you know, all around player, when you're really factoring in the defense and the base running. Henderson, though, was ever considered to be the kind of elite defender that Mays was. And so I think that's a tougher sell. I mean, you could just as reasonably argue for Cal Ripken Jr., mm-hmm. Who was an elite defender, at least in his prime, and who had, you know, power and contact ability as well. So I think it's fair to say that the debate is probably wide open with Mays having passed. It's one of those things anytime you name somebody who's connected to performance enhancing drugs, there's that yeah, but, and I think that would probably prevent some consensus when it comes to Bonds or A-Rod. I think the incomplete nature of the careers of guys like Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani, who are playing against tougher competition than even Mays had to face. There's the arguments against them. It's wide open for debate, and I think that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you're right. There is no consensus as to who now is the greatest living baseball player. I threw out names that you can bring up, guys like Mariano Rivera, who was the greatest closer of all time and as automatic as it gets in that job for his entire body of work. Sandy Koufax, who retires at 30, but maybe no more dominant pitcher over a 10-year period than what Koufax was able to do. You mentioned Ripken. I threw out Johnny Bench, who could arguably be the greatest catcher to ever play the game. It's such an interesting list, and yet there is a lot of debate, which maybe makes it a fun topic because there is no right answer the way it was looking at Willie Mays and saying, absolutely, here is the greatest living ball player.
Yeah, I think the debates rage, and I think that only helps baseball, that we can try to compare players across generations. We have tools that help, but they don't settle the matter. They only add fuel to the fire, and I have a lot of fun with that with my Hall of Fame system, but it's not definitive. It's just it's a starting point for debate, not an ending point.
A lot of guys getting hit, Jay, as of late. You know, Mookie Betts is going to be out a couple months. Big blow to the Dodgers. Nolan Arenado gets hit. X-rays negative. Same goes for Aaron Judge, who was hit in the hand, and his X-rays are negative. But a lot of guys are starting to get hit. I'm hearing talk about retaliation and should players start throwing at other teams just because their superstars are getting knocked out of games by getting popped. Where do you fall on this argument in terms of losing great talent and should teams retaliate?
Yeah, look, it stinks that a star like Betts can go down, and certainly I think the Yankees fans saw the season flash in front of their eyes when Judge went down last night. I was actually writing about Anthony Rizzo's broken arm, and I was worried there for a while that I was going to have to tear that up and rewrite it with both Judge and Rizzo hitting the injured list here. I strenuously believe, though, that the answer to violence is not more violence. And I know that, we like to revel in the stories of back in the day when Bob Gibson or Don Drysdale would knock somebody on their butt. In fact, it's a great story about Willie Mays. I think it was in the Ken Burns baseball series where he gets up to the plate and he's kind of digging in the batter's box with his back foot, getting himself set. Then he realizes Drysdale's on the mound, and he starts filling that hole, and he still goes down. I mean, those stories are fun, but, now that you've got guys throwing 100 miles an hour, the stakes are too high. It's just too dangerous, and I think it's the right thing to try to prevent those things from escalating, and, letting the bloodlust take over, I don't think is good for baseball. So, I would hope that teams steer clear of retaliation. I mean, the best revenge is to win.
Gerrit Cole comes back tonight for the Yankees as they get ready to take on the Orioles here in just a little bit. It's great news for the Yanks. I know a lot of fans have been waiting for Cole to return, and timing couldn't be any better with the Yankees 51-24 heading into tonight's game.
Yeah, I know the Yankees are pretty excited to get Cole back. I mean, they've had their rotation has done tremendously without him, better than anybody could have hoped, as Carlos Rodon and Nestor Cortes have bounced back from dreadful injury-shortened seasons, and Luis Gil has pitched his way into the Cy Young conversation. But their rotation has taken a couple of hits recently. First, Clark Schmidt landed on the injured list with a strained lat, and then his replacement, Cody Petit, who made a few good starts for them, he just landed on the IL yesterday as well. So Cole is returning just in time to keep them with a strong starting five.
All right. I know you're writing about Rizzo coming up here at Fangraphs.com. Will you be writing a retrospect on Mays, or is that just one of a million that are going to be coming out here in the next few days?
Yeah, I'm hoping that this Mays piece will run tomorrow. I'm well into it now here. I don't want it to get too late. And then after that, I am off for next week here. I might have one more piece coming. I'm with my family on our annual Cape Cod trip, working from what I call the field office here in Wellfleet. I'm probably going to catch a Cape Cod League game and do all kinds of beachside stuff here. So I'm looking forward to a little downtime with the family here, getting away from the screens.
All right, so that means we'll check back in with you in a couple weeks when you return. In the meantime, how about a beer pick to hold this over?
Okay, here, I got one here. I actually brought this up from New York because I wasn't sure how quickly I was going to be able to get my way into the local specialty shop here. This is the Strada Italian Pilsner from Torch and Crown. This is a, I would describe it as a hoppy Pilsner. That's the, what the Italian style tends to go for. 5.6 ABV, good, crisp session beer. Sitting out on a deck drinking one as I watch the tide come in to the marsh near us is a nice little perk here.
Enjoy it. Have a great time. Appreciate the conversation as always, and we'll check back here with you in a couple weeks.
All right. Sounds great, Steve. Thanks.
Jay Jaffe, folks, as we continue here on Sports Talk. Come back with plenty more. Stay with us. 600 ESPN El Paso. 47 past the hour as we continue. Thanks again to Jay Jaffe for joining us. He's out at the Cape, so we'll let Jay enjoy a little R&R with the family. We'll pick it up again in 2 weeks. Alberto, have you figured out how to give away these tickets?
Maybe the seventh caller?
Oh, my God.
Okay, you want a competition. 20,
you've had 25 minutes to give this thought, and the best you come up with is the seventh caller? Adrian, I mean, honestly, I could have done that without even using a drop of my brain.
We need a little Club America trivia, my friend. Something like that. No?
Hmm.
No, nothing like that?
We could. I don't really like them.
Who's your team?
Juarez.
Always FC Juarez?
Yeah, yeah. Well, when they were in the league, and then when they weren't in the league, it was Cruz Azul.
Ah, okay.
So it's even worse. I really don't like them.
So did Cruz Azul go back on the back burner once FC Juarez came back?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's good to know.
Secondary. Yeah, it's fun telling people in Mexico, oh, I'm from Juarez. I like the Bravos. That's who they bring up. But, yeah, who did
Well, hang on. I mean, are you ready to just give? Well, let's give it the end of the hour. You're thinking about this, right? Giving us some thought.
Yeah, I have one, but I'll think of another one.
Will it be right? Like, will this be one of these trivia questions you throw out and then you actually really don't even have the right answer? Or are you pretty convinced that this question will, like, you do know the answer to what you're going to ask?
Yes, yes. It won't be one of those where I want you to say something even though it's wrong. No.
Yeah, please. All right.
It'll be a right answer question.
Okay, so we don't have to Google or check it or anything. We know that whatever question you ask, you know the right answer.
Yes, yes.
All right, that's good. Wait till the end of the hour, and we'll let you give that. That way, if people call in during the break, we have a chance to talk to them, get the right answer, and we're not on air. See, that's my strategy there. That way we can start the second hour and announce the winner if we get one.
When we get one.
Ah, you're pretty confident.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You feel like somebody's
people are excited. I'm sure people are excited.
Oh, no, they're excited. But you feel like they know the kind of answers to the trivia questions you're going to throw out there.
I mean, they should if they're America fans like Domingo and stuff. So, well, I feel like he's a front runner.
Well, first off,
if he's listening.
I mean, you could also make it FC Juarez trivia.
That's true.
Doesn't have to always be Club America trivia, but for this exercise, you can make it Club America trivia.
Or it might be both.
Could be.
It could be a mix.
That would be good. All right. So we'll do that here in a little bit as we continue on the show. Hey, by the way, congratulations to the Edmonton Oilers. Unlike the Dallas Mavericks, the Oilers are trying to do the impossible. Come back from 3-0 down to win 4 straight and capture the Stanley Cup. And if they can pull this off, it would be one for the ages. But again, Adrian, last night, they went into Florida, got the win, hung on to win by 2 goals because they got the empty netter late, and now have set up a dramatic Game 6.
Yeah, as a hockey casual like myself, I love Connor McDavid. Oh, my goodness. The way that he's willed this team back a little bit in the series. And also, hockey's really deflating, right? I mean, hockey's one of those sports where, unlike, you know, in other sports, maybe football, even basketball, home court or home ice doesn't matter.
No.
No, like the game can change in a split second, and then the whole course of the rest of the playoffs, you know, some people consider it fluky, but that's just the excitement of the game that hockey really presents, especially in the Stanley Cup Finals.
I've always felt that for whatever reason, playoff hockey, you throw home ice out the window. You just have to, because so many times we will see road teams win big, big playoff games in the Stanley Cup playoffs. It just happens.
Yeah, it feels like the parity, and it's just kind of the nature of the sport, right? Like, yeah. It's how the sport is designed. That's why you see so many last-second goals or, you know, fans just being so distraught like yesterday. I think Panthers fans legitimately thought they were raising a banner yesterday for the first time in history.
Well, you know, listen, here's the one thing I'll say about that is you got to be careful. Did the Panthers win once before? I thought they've won.
Maybe they've won before. This was something me and Plenda were talking about yesterday. I did not fact check that one right there, but either way,
I feel like
I thought fans were really thinking that they were going to win yesterday, the way that they were out and ready to go.
Yeah. Well, listen. I mean, the Panthers, they've been to the Stanley Cup. I know that. So, you know, again, they've been around since 1993. They've had 3 conference championships. And no Stanley Cups. This would be the first.
That's a credit to Michael Plundo right there. But yeah, I think that they were all ready to raise the banner yesterday.
They went to 96, and then they've been in each of the last 2 years. But then, you're right. And we what do we say? They're built to win the Stanley Cup. And here are the Oilers. They've got something to say about it. So we'll see.
Very, very exciting series, though. I think even for non-hockey fans like me, I've been roped into this series just to see if this is actually possible. Can the team actually come back down 3-0?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. In fact, you know, as far as the Edmonton Oilers go, all right, they've won 5 Stanley Cups, but they haven't won since 1990. So they won their Stanley Cups in 84, 85, 87, 88, and 90. So if they win, we are talking almost a 35-year drought that is finally away.
Yeah, and I mean, for Canadians, they'd be ecstatic about that one right there. Just the fact that the Stanley Cup going back to Canada.
100%. All right, back to Alberto for a second. Do you have your trivia quiz ready to throw out for this terrific pair of tickets for Sunday's big matchup between FC Juarez and Club America?
Yes, and we did mix some. It's got to do with Bravos and America, so I'm thinking of a player. Okay, who had not one but 2 stints here in the borderland playing soccer and a stint with America. Also, he's a Mexican national team player. He played for Bravos, he played for America, played for on the Mexican national team. Who is that guy?
Wow, good question.
Great job.
It's easy.
Text me the answer.
Okay, I got
there you.
There you
go. Super easy. It's so easy. You're right. It's so easy. Make sure you text it to us so we get the right answer. All right. 505-6009. First person through to the phones with the answer to Alberto's trivia quiz will win the tickets to see FC Juarez and Club America this Sunday, 7:30, out at the Sun Bowl. That's 505-6009. We have lines available as we continue. We'll take a timeout, come back. Jeff Erickson's 25 minutes away. Tim Haggerty is about an hour and 20 minutes away. And then we'll have Chihuahuas baseball coming up right here. Game 2 of their series with the Space Cowboys on 600 ESPN El Paso.
Dave Kaplowitz and Adrian Broaddus.
All right, welcome back. Hour 2 of the show. We've got Alberto Dueta with us here today. UTEP Zay is also in the house as well. How are you, Zay? Do we get a winner yet on Alberto's trivia?
Yes, we did. By the way, great job, Alberto. We love the trivia right there. Victor Hernandez guessed this one correctly. You should tee it up for our listeners once again. Give the trivia question. Give the answer there, Alberto.
Okay, so I asked, there was one player who had 2 stints here in the borderland playing soccer and a stint in America, and then following that came and played at the Bravos, and the answer to that was Paul Aguilar. He played here. He finished his career here in 2022.
Paul Aguilar.
Yes. And then in 2015, he scored a golden goal against the United States to win the CONCACAF Gold Cup. Yeah.
So he was a hero in Mexico.
In that one, in 2015, at that game at the Rose Bowl that I was at? Yes.
Yeah, well, yes. I'm happy Victor won those tickets. That'll be a great job, Victor. We'll give away another pair out here tomorrow on the show as well. So send somebody out to the Sun Bowl to go watch the battle between FC Juarez and Club America. Excited about that coming up this Sunday. In the meantime, hour 2 is underway. UTEP Zay in the house. How are you today, Zay?
Doing great. I wish the weather was a little bit nicer, but, you know, can't complain about much.
When you say you wish the weather was a little bit nicer, what do you mean? Do you mean you wish it was sunny and 105 degrees?
I just wish it wasn't windy. I'm not a big fan of the wind. I hate the wind. It messes up my hair. It makes it dusty outside. I get allergies. It's horrible.
Yeah, man, I get it. I don't know anybody that likes the wind, but all I can tell you is, like 106 degrees and sunny is not on my list of favorite weather conditions either.
You know, I'll be honest. I'd rather it be hot than cold. I'm a hot guy. I like the heat.
Do you really?
Yeah, it's just more enjoyable. I can't stand blistering cold. I can't stand being cold outside. It's just, I don't know what it is.
I will take, if you ask me, cold over heat any day of the week. Wind, I'm not a huge fan of either. I won't say I like it windy. Although, thank goodness I don't have much hair these days, so even if it's windy, it's not going to blow much in the air. I'm not like you, Adrian, with that great head of lettuce, or, you know, Alberto, or even Zay. Zay's got great hair. No, and so does Plundo. Everybody at the radio station but me on this show has great hair. I mean, everybody has great, great head of hair. It's fantastic.
I just looked outside. It looked awful, Steve. We're going to be the ones with dust, pollen, you know, sand in our hair. You're going to be the one who gets to laugh at us after the show.
Thanks. I don't know how much I'm going to be laughing, but I guess that's some
guy. It looks awful outside. That's just the bottom line.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's rough. By the way, I'm not going to mention where, but I just did something I was very much kind of against, but I decided to do it. You know what I did? I bought one of those car wash monthly memberships.
Oh, okay. And now we have a good conversation here.
And I wasn't ready to do that for a long time because I'm the kind of person that lets my car just look dirty and then filthy and finally just decide to spring it. But here's the deal now. Some of these car washes are so damn expensive that for like double the price, you can go as often as you want. And usually with my luck, when I get it washed, something bad happens. Like it either rains and gets spotted 2 days later, or wind and then it gets all dusty and dirty. So yesterday I finally decided, all right, I'll try it for a month. Let's see what happens. And you know, I'm also one of these people now. Now they finally got smart. For the longest time, you know, the car washers would always come out and dry your car with microfibers and everything. Now they make you do it. They're like, we're not going to bother ourselves with this stuff. No. You want to wash, you dry. So now I carry a couple of these stupid cloths in the back of my car so that when I'm done, if you're getting it washed, you want to dry it so it's not spotted and all that. So I'm outside like an idiot in the sun, just, you know, going and working, getting a good sweat and drying my car, and then I got to vacuum it and all that. Well, now you're talking about how windy it is, my car is going to look like absolute crap in about, it probably does already. So if I want to, as soon as it stops being windy, I can go back, have them just run it through again. Don't pay for it because now you're part of that membership deal that they have. I don't like it, but in El Paso with the wind, I feel like that could be one of the solutions to this issue.
You know, for these unnamed car washes, they're popping up everywhere. It's like they're like Starbucks or, yep, you know, kind of like the Dutch Bros wave were here recently. But these are like ridiculous, man. We're seeing them on like every single corner, which is kind of scaring me, right? Are we doing the wrong thing here in radio? Like, should we switch over and start doing these unlimited car wash businesses or something like that?
Well, first off, it is nice to vacuum your own car. Like, you know what the weirdest thing is? You're paying all this money, and you have to do a lot of work.
You have to do half
like,
of it.
You have to do half of it. Exactly. You have to dry the car. Then you got to, if you want to, you have to vacuum the car. So those are two things. Now, I mean, again, I'm fine with that because the thing is, I finally came to a point where I'm like, you know what? Let's just see how this goes, and I'll try it for a month, and if it works out fine, we'll keep rolling it through. But my biggest issue is that I've never really had the time to just run cars through the wash every week or, you know, whenever it gets dirty. I usually just wait. And then when I finally have had enough and I'm in the area and I see one, I'm like, oh, how convenient. But you're right. Everywhere you go, you drive on Mesa, there's a car wash every 30 seconds, every half mile. It's nuts. So they're almost making it to a point where they want you to just stop and do it and bring it by and do all that.
You made a good point also about the unpredictability for the weather aspect of this. That's probably why there's so many different ones popping up everywhere. Like, they can feast on everybody. There's room for everybody to eat here in this situation because of all the stuff they've got going on.
And all
our horrible and unpredictable weather that we have here in El Paso. I shouldn't say horrible, but it's just unpredictable.
But you know what the cool thing is? So, you know how all of our guests always appear on the Longhorn Distributing Hotline, all of our phone guests like Jay Jaffe just did, and how we'll have Jeff Erickson do that here in about 10 minutes from now. Longhorn Distributing has, like, all these great sprays. So, like, in the house I have, they call it Showroom Shine. It's, like, pink, comes out of a spray bottle, and it's kind of like that thing that you put on your car to touch it up. So if it's not dirty enough for a wash, but it's still you feel like you want to just give it an extra touch, they've got that stuff. So I have that. And then, you know, I also have their it's like Armor All except for the tires, except it's like a water base instead of the other kind that, you know, there's two different versions of it. So I have that too. So I have all my products from Longhorn. So whenever they try to upcharge you at the car washes, I'm like, nah, I can just go home and do that. No. And truthfully, I could also wash my car at the house, but it's a pain in the ass. I mean, you know, it really is. I'm not going to do that right now. In fact, I paid my kid to do that. I was giving Joel a chance to earn an extra $5.
Ooh.
Said, here you go wash the car and vacuum it. And you got a 5-spot waiting for you, which is cheaper than you're going to pay at the car wash anyway. And he's all excited because it gives him a chance to earn some extra money.
You know what? I'm not going to use any names, but like you said, there's a lot of car washes that have taken over the city.
Yep.
And I personally have a little bit of an issue with them.
Of course you do. You don't want to pay $1.50 for a bottle of water for a girl you were going out with after a gym. I can understand.
After the pandemic, they stopped accepting cash. So they're everywhere, but they don't take Apple Pay, and they wouldn't take cash. So it was like, where am I supposed to go? You don't take cash, and you won't take my Apple Pay, and you're the one that washes the cars. It's all on my fault, though.
You know what I don't understand? Cash is king.
Yeah,
why would you not take cash?
Exactly. And it's like,
if I was running one of these places, maybe that's the first thing you tell is it's cash only. You know what? You're the opposite of these other places. You're like, hey, we only accept cash. That's it. And then it's like, maybe you should do that. Maybe you should open a car wash.
Cash only.
Cash only. And by the way, I'll make it easy for you, okay? Don't even buy any machines. Listen, here's what you do, okay? You got a hose. You got one of those little brushes with soap.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love it.
Then you got a bunch of towels, and here's the key. Here's the kicker. Okay. You make it a bikini car wash.
Mm.
So now it's cash only. You've got people. You've got your staff in bikinis. You're using a hose. You're using soap. None of this high-tech crap, none of this, contactless stuff, or none of that. You're going old school. And now you are going, and it's summer in El Paso. So there's people that are going to want to be out in bikinis and get paid 100%. And you could pay them cash because you're running a cash facility. So now all of a sudden you're cash only. You're going hose, regular soap,
bikinis.
No bells and whistles, bikinis, cash. Thoughts?
I think that would really work.
I think there are a lot of places that do this, like as far as just promos.
Like a fundraiser.
So, yeah,
no,
and
but
fundraisers.
This is, yeah, but there's
like
no, there is no fundraiser promo. This is the business model. Monday through Sunday from, let's just say, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. or 7 p.m., whatever you want to do. And that's it. And you go from there. And you ever see the movie Bikini Car Wash when you were when it was on USA Up All Night back in the 80s and 90s?
Most definitely not.
Oh, man, it was on. I'm old enough to remember when Bikini Car Wash was a pretty popular movie in rotation on USA
on
Up All Night. Yeah, on cable. That's right. You could be the American dream. You could fulfill your fantasies. You become a business owner. You do it all cash. You don't accept credit cards. None of that. And you do it the right way with very little overhead. All you need is a little water area where you can just put a hose in and start working it. And that's it.
A public water
Yes.
faucet. Yeah,
that's right.
I I need to find one.
What do you think about that idea?
As soon as I find that free water faucet I can connect the hose to,
yes,
we're in business.
Free water faucets. All you need to do is find an area with a and then set up shop. You'll have like a, it'll be like a pop-up store. Ooh, there's an idea. You make it a pop-up location. You advertise it on social media. FitFam, next thing you know, they're advertising where the bikini car wash is going to be happening. And you do it like that. And you bounce around the whole city with all these little pop-up bikini car washes.
And it would really work because I'm sure that we would develop regulars. You know, people who are just coming for them car washes time after time after time. That happens already at the car washes. So, yeah. Imagine if, when you add the bikini into the mix, people are going to go crazy.
Zay, is this something that you think has a chance to succeed?
I mean, maybe. Me personally, I like washing my car myself. I go to those self-car washing things, yeah. You know, and I'll put in, you know, maybe a dollar, a couple of dollars, and I'll get it done in 3 minutes for, you know, $3.
So. See, like that super hose that's like the strongest hose on the planet, and then you hose that down. Hopefully you don't take any paint off your car, and then you just take care of all the soap and everything else. All
right. Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Would you know what's interesting is maybe that's an added aspect to this. Like you could go through the car wash and have somebody do it for you, or you could do it yourself, self-serve, coins and cash only with this service right here.
Yep, that's
true. Cash only, coins only.
That is true. Anyway, look, by the way, I know Esteban said the name of the film was Car Wash. There was a movie called Car Wash. He's right. In the 70s, there was a movie called Car Wash. This was a low-budget movie that featured topless women called Bikini Car Wash that was edited out of TV because it was on USA somewhere in the 80s and 90s, Esteban. So remember that. See, you guys are too young, but there used to be these movies like this. They were awful B-movies, and they were the same format. It was always something that was a little risque for late night TV that would come on, kind of edited, kind of stupid, and these are the movies that were really popular back in the day. So, yes, I mean, anyway, and I knew that was one of the movies. That was absolutely one of those movies back in those days. So, you know, I mean, I get it, but anyway, that's just how it was. By the way, there's a bunch of bikini car wash movies. I mean, my God. I think there was one in 92, one in 93. They had another one in like 2017. Now, that was good. Bikini Car Wash Massacre, which came out. They made a horror movie out of it. They had a bunch of them. In the last, like, I don't know, in the last 30 or 40 years, there's been a ton of them. So that's the point.
Okay, but are we hiring girls who... All right, what's on our objective?
Well, first off, it's not my job. This is yours.
Okay. Well, I was just wondering, do we want girls who are going to clean the cars really well, or what criteria are we looking to meet? But I guess that's my decision to make.
You're the owner of this business. Yes. I don't care what you do.
Okay.
Adrian, if Alberto opened up a bikini car wash company, would you support him?
Well, I would support Alberto in any of his ventures. So, yes, by default, I would say yes. You know, I might not necessarily go right away, but what I would do is I'd purchase some gift cards or, you know, maybe purchase a membership program or something like that from afar.
Are you afraid that if you and your wife drove in with his bikini car wash venture, she would give you some looks? Is that the idea? Is that what you're worried about?
Man, these EAS are at such convenient times right here.
Just use the app. Just use the app.
Thank goodness for all our app listeners right here. They've got it going. I'm not worried, but I would say this. When it comes to things like this, I'm not the biggest fan. I'm not, like, it's just not my cup of tea, but it's okay. Like, I think a lot of people would be all over it.
You know who would hate it? Plundo.
He would.
Plundo would say that's a disgrace. And God forbid that should ever happen and open in this town. I'm telling you right now, that's exactly what he would say. So we'll get his reaction tomorrow when he comes back. All right, listen, you've got an idea. Now you know what to do. Very, very little overhead. Lots of upside. Good luck. I hope you run with it, and I hope you you make a ton of money. We could talk about this radio show years from now with a big laugh as you're pouring us a bottle of Dom Perignon from your bar.
Because the bikini car wash just exploded.
Yeah, and you're the mastermind. This is your baby.
And I recruited all the right girls.
Yes.
All the right talent.
That's right. And one of the things you require in their interview is make sure that when you're thirsty, you're drinking hose water. You're not drinking bottled water. You're like, listen, hey, you're going to have to drink out of the hose. If it's good enough for the cars, it's good enough for you.
You're going to ask, you got a fiver to buy your own water, right?
Oh, that's my God. There it is.
Man, no bottled water's on staff.
We had to come full circle with Alberto and his bottled water situation, didn't we? Drink out of the hose, ladies.
She comes, applies.
That's exactly. All right. We'll come back. We got Jeff Erickson next, right after Charlie One in this traffic update. Back here on Sports Talk as we continue. Oh, man. Watching some videos of earlier today. A lot of interesting storylines. Felt bad for Nolan Arenado today. He's had a kind of rough season for the Cards. They all have, actually. Arenado, Goldschmidt. Nobody's really hitting great for the Cardinals right now. Everybody is just kind of scuffling. And then Alberto and I were just watching what happened to Nolan Arenado, Adrian. He got hit in the elbow, and then the ball ricocheted right into the jewels.
Not good whatsoever. This is separate from the other one, correct?
No, yeah, it's a different one. No,
oh, so he's had a horrible, like, 2-3 days.
Well, no, Arenado, I don't think Arenado, this was, I think he got hit today was the first, I don't know if he got hit yesterday or not. I got to ask Jeff Erickson about that one.
Yeah, he left the game being hit by a pitch. I think this was, yeah, okay. So then that's it. Okay.
Jeff, first off, welcome back from Fangraphs.com. I'm sorry, Fangraphs, from RotoWire.com. We just had Jeffy from Fangraphs. You're from RotoWire, as always. By the way, Jeff, do players in Major League Baseball, to your knowledge, do most of the good ones wear cups?
I have no idea.
I don't know either. So, did you see what happened with Arenado today?
Yeah, I did. They expect him to return on Saturday.
Oof.
What
did more damage? The elbow or the midsection?
Yeah, it was. Well, keep in mind they're playing the Rickwood games.
That's right.
So I think their Rickwood game, I should say. So I think they're playing tomorrow in Birmingham. Then they're off on Friday. So he gets one day off tomorrow, and then he should be back to good to go on Saturday.
That's good to know. I'm just wondering what did more damage. Was it the ball that hit him in the elbow, or then which went to the jewels? Because it like was the perfect carom, and I'm looking at this pitch going, oh my God, that's double trouble.
Yeah. It sure does look like double trouble. I didn't get a good chance at seeing it the first time. I won't speculate on which is worse. You know, you get hit on the wrong part of the elbow, that could be just as bad, too.
You're right.
But not so funny bone.
Well, look, there's a lot of guys getting hit by pitches. I mean, it's happening more and more. In fact, first it was Mookie Betts and then the injury, then Judge, and then who else got hit yesterday? There was like three of them that all got hit yesterday. A couple in the hand, too.
Yeah, it was a cavalcade of that. I mean, the Judge one is the one I had my attention the most.
Yep.
But yeah, just sometimes you get kind of that run of bad luck. Sometimes, you know, sometimes it's because the pitchers are legitimately trying to jam in a hitter, and sometimes it just gets a little bit away. Sometimes the hitters are diving in. You know, it just sometimes it's really unlucky.
Yeah, you're right. By the way,
Mookie, obviously the big one.
Yeah, huge. Bruised elbow is what they're saying for Arenado. So I guess the good news is the fact that X-rays were negative and he's day to day. So that could have been a lot worse. Judge, by the way, not in the Yanks lineup after being hit on the hand. I know I was looking at this because I was trying to think to myself. I'm like, you know what? Why don't they make batting gloves with better hand protection on the hand that is exposed? But then I noticed Franklin sells like a hand guard that you put right on top of your batting glove that can protect the hand and the wrist from that very thing. I don't know how many players are using it because maybe it's not comfortable enough, but there is protection out there, and maybe more and more players need to really give that some thought because we're seeing how many fastballs are going up and in and hitting players in the hands these days.
For sure, and I think immediately think of Jeff Bagwell. Remember, twice in his career, early in his career, he had like broken hand, broken wrist, and then did wear protection the rest of his career. And, you know, obviously there is some concern about his career, even to the point, like, is he fragile and things like that. No, of course he's not fragile. He's unlucky. He had that protection and went on to a Hall of Fame career.
That's true. And you're right. But the fact that it's out there is good to know anyway. I guess players just have to adopt it if they want. It's just like the elbow pads. It's just like the foot pad. I mean, sometimes I watch these AAA games here with the Chihuahuas, and when batters are going up, they look like the Michelin Man because they've got more protection than they do than anything else. And you're looking at them going, well, at least you know that if they get hit, they're probably going to be able to stay in the lineup.
Yeah, that's right. And sometimes you just get unlucky, you get hit in the wrong spot. You know, a lot of players, you know, have to be convinced to use it because they think it messes with their swing, or they're not comfortable with it. I'm sure many of them have tried it out and just found it wanting. Others, you know, maybe indeed that they can get used to it a little bit more.
Very true. We're talking right now with Jeff Erickson from RotoWire.com, your one-stop shop for all fantasy sports. Gerrit Cole's on the mound tonight, making his season debut for the Yanks. 13-pitch first inning where he gave up a couple of hits and a run, but the Yankees are happy to have him back. You know that. In fact, they are probably thrilled that they can plug, you know, their ace into their rotation at a point where they're already 51 wins and leading the American League East.
Yep, and they've loaded the bases against Cade Povich so far here in the bottom of the first, so we'll see if they can get some run support. You know, it's a lot different from striking out 9 in a AAA rehab assignment versus facing the Orioles, you know, who've been just crushing it. So, you know, quite a different setup there. Happy to have him back. And Cody Petit went on the IL at the same time, so, you know, the timing was good there.
Yeah, you're right. And for the Yankees, by the way, not only are they getting Gerrit Cole, but also Ben Rice has taken the place of their first baseman, Anthony Rizzo. That's who I was thinking about earlier. He didn't get hit in the hand, but he fell awkwardly and broke his arm. And is now on the
8 weeks, too.
Yeah, it's a bad injury.
And it looked totally innocuous. It was that Sunday night game, and you're like, oh, okay, well, he fell. Okay, well, I hope he's okay. Wow, I'm surprised he's coming out. Oh, wow, broken arm, out 8 weeks. Yep. And, you know, I have a buddy in softball had a similar collision at first base and ended up breaking a bone in his wrist, and he was out like 6 weeks. You know, it's just one of those things where you're like, oh, I guess you're not okay. And you think that they're going to be all right initially.
Rice is an interesting example because here's a guy that's 25 years of age, really was not a huge prospect heading into this season because he had a big platoon split, couldn't hit lefties. Well, this year he's hitting lefties as well as he's hitting righties, went from AA to AAA, now he's in the big leagues. He's kind of that catcher slash first base slash kind of like in the same mold maybe as David Fry of the Guardians. Does a little bit of everything, and now the Yankees are hoping that he can at least help fill the void while Rizzo's on the IL.
Yeah, and this is a guy who's a 12th round pick out of Dartmouth, you know, so he's kind of under the radar a little bit there. He's always been a little old for his level, in part because he's a college draftee, and, you know, kind of a slow to cook prospect. Still not ranked super high on our prospect list, but he's there at 220. But yeah, I mean, the numbers have been great, and you know, that's something you look for and you're like, oh, okay. And you know, the batting eye is pretty good. You know, there's a lot to like there. He even stole 7 bases so far at AA. It's a big jump from AA to the majors, but and AA to AAA to the majors like that. But at the same time, yeah, it's exciting to see what he could do.
More with Jeff as we continue here on Sports Talk. But first, let's send it back right now over to Adrian, standing by with this Sports Center update.
Thank you very much, Steve. The Chihuahuas hit 4 home runs in their 10-8 loss to the Sugarland Space Cowboys last night out at Southwest University Park. This was the opener of a 6-game series that'll close the first half of the season. It was third baseman Eggy Rosario who went 1-for-5 with a 460-foot home run, the longest recorded home run of his professional career, and the longest by a Chihuahuas player this season. We will be back in action tonight with you for some El Paso Chihuahuas baseball. Lefty Jackson Wolf on the mound for El Paso. We'll have you covered right here, 600 ESPN El Paso, with first pitch taking place in about an hour. Going over to another story today, this out of the NBA. The Pistons fired Monty Williams after just a season. They're absorbing the remaining $65 million on his contract. Here's another pitiful moment, or I guess a snapshot, for the last five seasons for Detroit. They have finished with a franchise record 68 losses last year. Their struggles aren't new, however, as they have the third worst winning percentage of any team in a five stretch in NBA history. Wow, that is really tough right there. Over a five-year stretch, Detroit is 94-290 with a 2.45 winning percentage right now. Going over to that story that we talked about from earlier, Cardinals third baseman Nolan Arenado left today's 4-3 loss to Miami after he was hit in the right elbow by a fastball from a Marlins reliever. The manager for the Cardinals said that he's day-to-day. X-rays were negative in this situation, and it was a tough situation all around in this story. But again, once more in this one, Marlins win 4-3. That's a look at your SportsCenter update. I'm Adrian Broaddus.
All right, thank you very much, Adrian. We're back right now with Jeff Erickson from rotowire.com as we continue. Before I get to your thoughts on the great Willie Mays, who we lost yesterday at the age of 93. Let's talk about some young arms that are getting a lot of attention around fantasy baseball. Some names that are not familiar names, but they're doing very well for themselves during their first go-around. Let's begin with Milwaukee pitcher Tobias Myers.
Yeah, he's a guy that was not the first or second choice for most analysts in terms of getting the call for the Brewers. But they've had so many pitcher injuries, with Robert Gausser out for the year especially, that they've turned to Myers, and he's actually pitched very well the last couple times out, last three times out, as a matter of fact, starting that June 7th game against the Tigers. When, you know, the longest inning by a Brewers pitcher all year so far, eight innings in that one. And he's followed up with two more strong outings. I love what he did last night, six and a third scoreless, six Ks. Getting more Ks than I would have thought, too. Kind of another pop-up prospect, a guy that we didn't expect a whole lot of. You know, wasn't even really ranked in most prospect rankings there. And so far, so good. I think there's probably going to be a little regression eventually here. That's usually the norm. For instance, like his FIP, his ERA is 3.26. His FIP ERA, fielder independent pitching, is 4.66. So suggested that, you know, he's gonna run into a little bit of bad luck probably on balls in play. You know, 8.5% swinging strike rate means that he's not missing a ton of bats either. So you would expect that in terms of like when they swing on the ball, they're gonna make better contact eventually. So I think this is probably his peak right now.
Another name that a lot of people don't know much about, David John Hertz, also known as DJ Hertz with Washington. Another arm that's done very well for himself.
Yeah, sure has. Got 13 Ks against the Marlins last time. The real shocker was that he didn't walk anybody. Because you look at his walk rate all throughout his minor leagues, it's really high. 29 walks this year and 36 innings for AAA Rochester. I got to think that there's probably some pretty strong regression. He goes to Coors Field for his next start. So hopefully if you did pick him up, you stash him. I wouldn't use him against the Rockies this week.
Okay, how do we explain what Jonathan Cannon is doing right now with the White Sox?
Pitching very well. Took apart, you know, granted, he faced a Houston team that was missing both Kyle Tucker and Jordan Alvarez yesterday. That tends to help. But you look at what he did, it's not just one outing, though, too. He's pitched, but, you know, he's really kind of turned it around. You know, I think there's something there. I mean, he's 6'6". You'd think he would throw harder than he does. It's weird. He only throws like a 90-mile-an-hour cutter. He tries to generate weak contact. He does generate a lot of ground balls. He did get a lot of strikeouts, though, at AAA at the start of the season there. So maybe he's kind of improved on his offerings to begin the year. Got to like what you saw from him yesterday. Only 4 Ks, but still got paid the bills.
That's true. Cade Povich back in the big leagues pitching against the Yanks tonight. Did not do great at all in his first start, but Baltimore showing some patience, especially with the news that Kyle Bradish has Tommy John surgery today.
Yeah, that's right. And he pitched better, much better in his second start. There's thought that maybe that he might get one more start, and Dean Kramer is going to come back this weekend. Now with Bradish out and out for the season, yeah, Povich is going to get a longer ramp, and I think that I think there's something here. Of the pitchers we've talked about today, I think he's the one I'm most optimistic about. I love his home park. I love the lineup that's behind him, the defense that's behind him. I think there's a good chance that he could stick.
All right. Again, if you would like to learn more from the team at RotoWire, all you have to do is go to rotowire.com and you'll see Jeff. Also, he hosts a podcast on SiriusXM, on YouTube, a lot of good content up on the website at rotowire.com. I got to get your thoughts on Willie Mays, who passed yesterday at the age of 93. Probably like me, you didn't get to see Willie during his playing days yet,
yeah.
Jeff. From everything we had a chance to hear from people that were able to watch Willie, one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, pretty much a perfect player. Hit for power, hit for average. Played incredible defense, ran, and an incredible person from all I've heard as well.
Was Mike Trout pre-injuries the closest thing to Willie Mays that we've seen in Major League Baseball?
That's a good question. I think Willie covered more ground in center, but it's close. It's close. The thing is with Trout, yeah, the injuries are the big issue with him. Willie Mays hit 660 homers, and he played most of his career in a ballpark in San Francisco, Candlestick, that are in the ballparks before that, that didn't accentuate his power either.
Right.
And that's one of the amazing things to me. I think Willie was. I don't think Trout reached that level in hitting for average. Perhaps his coverage in center field might not have been as great. He kind of bulked up sooner in his career. I think that's the thing that was a little bit different.
I still wonder if Trout's going to end up making the Hall of Fame when it's all said and done, because he was thought to be a generational can't-miss talent before the injuries really started to pile up and has just derailed the second half of his career.
Yeah, it sure has. I think he'll probably get there. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Ken Griffey Jr., except, and also the lack of playoff success, too. To draw that parallel even farther a little bit there. But we'll see if there's a second act for Trout. I really do think he needs to get out of Anaheim.
I would agree with that. Although he's had opportunities in the past and he's stayed committed to the Angels, which really makes you wonder. He's never asked for a trade in all the years he's been there.
Yeah. Now, he doesn't have to ask for one. He can just, if he can tell them, like, okay, you can shop me around if you want or something like that. I'll waive the no trade. But he's never hit the open market either. He's never been a free agent.
That's
so,
true.
Yes, he could have not opted for the long-term contract, but, we usually praise players for sticking with their original club, for being loyal to their team. I don't want to ding him for not being loyal to his team.
Who, in your opinion, is right now the greatest living baseball player?
That's a great question. Pitcher would be Clayton Kershaw.
Interesting. Really interesting.
Yeah, hitter-wise, I think that's a great question. I mean, because you got to have some depth to their career, right?
You do. Now, I'm not talking about active necessarily. It's just anybody who's alive who could have the moniker, the greatest living baseball player, just like Mays was up until when he passed.
Yeah, I think that that's a better question for Jay Jaffe, actually, to be honest with you.
I asked him that. And by the way, you want to hear what his answer was? There is no answer. He said it's a completely up-for-debate answer in terms of that, because so many different ways you can go.
Yeah, I love the question, though. If you just want to go by, like, war, it's Trout. And Verlander versus Kershaw, by the way, I forgot about Verlander. I think it's a pretty close call. Hitter-wise, it's Trout or Mookie, but I think Trout's done more. Wow.
What about all time? All time, do you go with Griffey Jr.? Or do you go with Bonds and just not even think about the steroid era and just say it's Barry Bonds who has the fourth highest WAR in the history of the game? Do you go with Mariano Rivera, who could be the greatest, who's the greatest closer in the game and arguably could be the greatest, the greatest living ball player for what he was able to do throughout his career?
You could go old school and go Babe Ruth too for completely changing the game. I think I would take Mays over Bonds.
Living. We're going living now.
Living. Yeah. Good call.
I'll throw more names at you. Mike Schmidt, Cal Ripken Jr., Sandy Koufax.
I think it's Bonds.
Yeah.
I really do think it's Bonds. And here's the real problem, Steve, is like, you know, we can automatically discount Bonds or Clemens because we know that there were some substances used.
Yep.
But I think just because we don't know others doesn't mean it doesn't exist. You know what I'm saying? I think we'd be. I guarantee you, there's probably one player out there that's like an all-time player.
Sure.
I'm not saying it's one of the ones we mentioned, but I'm just saying, just generally speaking, that there's one that we'd be shocked by that got away with it.
Completely agree. And by the way, whether you do greatest active ball player or greatest all-time living ball player, you could do a full 30-minute podcast on that in a heartbeat.
Oh, absolutely. But I go greatest living. I still say Bonds because, I mean, people forget about the first half of his career, the Pittsburgh part of his career, and the MVPs that he won there and how he was an amazing defensive player. He was an amazing runner. People don't remember that aspect. All they think of is the bulked-up slugger. And the guy that got left off the all-century team at the turn of the century there, and why one of the reasons, the motivating factors, I think, for him to bulk up and hit more homers was because of that spurn. I really think that changed a lot of things there, where I think he thought he deserved more credit, and I think he was correct.
Yeah.
Happened to be on a lot of teams. You know, kind of a unifying trend is being on teams that fell short of ultimate team glory. And we have a bad habit as a sports society of blaming the star of those teams for the shortcomings. Like people blaming Luka for their loss to the Celtics this week. You know, Luka was out of his mind in a lot of these games. The problem was that Dallas didn't have as deep of a roster, and you know, players three through seven, respectively, it wasn't even close. Boston had a much deeper team. And I think the same is true with baseball a lot of times.
So true. Hey, great stuff. I enjoyed the end of this one as much as the rest of the segment. Appreciate the conversation. We'll do it again with you right back here next week, Jeff.
Awesome. Thanks, Steve.
Jeff Erickson, rotowire.com, as we continue here on Sports Talk. 45 past the hour. We're exactly 45 minutes away for the start of Chihuahua's baseball with Tim Haggerty. It's coming up right here, 600 ESPN El Paso. Back here on Sports Talk as we wrap up hour two. Saw this a moment ago from Eddie Morelos at DeMayor LC. As journalists who sometimes do sideline interviews, what do you think about this situation? Talking about today's game where Miami Marlins interviewer Jessica Blaylock gets soaked by cold water after giving an interview to Vidal Bruján after the Marlins beat the Cardinals. Jazz Chisholm threw the water on them, was flexing afterwards. By the way, Blaylock was doing this interview inside the stadium. This was actually wasn't a TV interview. This was for the whole ballpark. She handled it like a pro. She really did. She laughed it off. She kept going. It didn't faze her. And what Eddie's asking is, you know, what do I think about the situation? Well, not cool at all for somebody like Jazz to just drench her and soak her from head to toe while she's doing an interview. That being said, it happens from time to time. I've seen it in other interviews where people will dump water on a player from behind and the interviewer gets it. So I've never seen anybody just drench her back the way they did with that water, which got Bruján, but mostly got Blaylock. She handled it like a pro, which is not easy to do, especially when you're mic'd in front of that entire crowd.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe she actually did this, Steve. Kept her composure. Everything was solid in this one. Yeah, I think a lot of people would have bad reactions there. This is a great example of a positive reaction. Yeah. It's tough because you're just having to be you have to think fast on your feet. And when you have this kind of thing come your way, it's easy to say, who did that or what the heck? You know, that kind of thing.
Alberto, would you have dropped an F-bomb if you were doing that interview in the Sun Bowl and somebody did that to you and you got the brunt of the water in front of the whole crowd?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I was really surprised that she didn't cuss because, I mean, you hit me with that cold water, what I'm sure was cold water.
Oh, yeah.
And my instinct's going to be to rip. I'm quick to cuss.
So,
I would have let one rip.
Zay, what about you? Your thoughts?
I definitely would have tried to handle it like a pro, but honestly, unless I'm in that position, I really don't know how I'd react.
So kudos to Jessica Blaylock. She handled it like a pro.
Yeah, really.
Better
did.
Than probably 99% of the people in that same situation.
Yeah. No doubt about it. You know, another thing is she's wearing all pink, Steve.
Yep.
And it looked like tight fitting clothes. Like, that's not going to be a fun one right there to try to dry off in.
No, that's going to be an absolute utter disaster for her. And I'm sure that's right, because she probably does not have a change of clothes.
Right.
Chances are that is all she brought to work, which means how do you dry off from that?
Miami, muggy weather.
Yuck.
Gross. Humidity. Yeah, I feel bad for her.
Yeah, I do too. All right. Anyway, and was it right for Jazz Chisholm? No, absolutely not. But we've seen water throws before. That one just looked deliberate, like they were really trying to make sure they soaked her from head to toe.
Yeah, I think it was kind of deliberate because even if you watch it, you can see that from the angle from which the water comes, the player can see.
Yeah, he knows it's coming.
See, you know, he knows it's coming. So usually the players come from the other side so they can warn the reporter,
right.
Tell him to jump up. So that's where I was like, well, this is deliberate. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't take too nicely to it. I'd be really, really
and
bothered.
Chisholm is celebrating like he just won the World Series.
Yeah, that's what kind of bothers me. Yep. But, I mean, she takes it in stride and keeps the conversation going.
Yeah, right on. All right, we got 30 minutes left to go. We got more in a moment. We'll get Tim Haggerty's thoughts on Willie Mays as Sports Talk continues. 600 ESPN El Paso.
From the 600 ESPN El Paso River Oaks Property Schoolyard Sports Studio, here's Steve Kaplowitz and Adrian Broaddus.
Oh, we got 25 minutes left to go with you here on the show as we continue. We also have UTEP Zay, Alberto Urueta. We are at home sweet home for us, our 600 ESPN El Paso River Oaks Property Schoolyard Sports Studios. But speaking of home sweet home, there is no home in this town better than Palo Verde home. That's right. In fact, there's a reason for that. Palo Verde right now is currently offering a $2,000 buyer's agent bonus on all inventory homes in addition to amazing buyer incentives. That's through Clearview Realty at 996-5972, but also 5.875% interest rates on complete homes. That is a great deal. And you know what else? I love the fact that Palo Verde is working with UTEP football. They've got some UTEP football players right now that are part of the NIL program with Palo Verde because Edgar and company trying to help the university out and doing so with people like Isaiah Wright and other minors that are all for the cause at Palo Verde Homes.
Yeah, in fact, Steve, if you go to their Instagram account, that's Palo Verde Homes on Instagram, they got over 3,000 followers, so maybe you could be one of those followers out there as well. But they post some of these videos that we're talking about right here with the UTEP football players, the NIL videos. I love them. And you know what I also love about Palo Verde Homes is all the different homes that they offer, the elevations, including Spanish, Tuscan, contemporary, and everybody's favorite, the farmhouse elevation. They've got great online reviews, and they received a lifetime achievement award from the 210 Home Buyer's Warranty. Check them out online, paloverdehome.com.
Outfit after she got drenched. And then somebody else tried to get her drenched. This time she got out of the way, had fun with it, was joking around with Jazz Chisholm, who was the perpetrator. And he even told her he's got a box of chocolates waiting for her because apparently that's what she wanted in exchange for getting dumped with all that water. And they were having fun. But then I was looking at her Twitter handle, and I noticed she's on Cameo. So, Adrian, I went to Cameo, and I realized that for $15, you could pretty much get someone like Jessica Blaylock to say whatever you want about her, birthday wish or anything like that. And then I started going to the sports reporter list on Cameo because I was curious who's on Cameo and how much are they charging for mentions. Here we go. I'm going to run down some of these names. John Gruden, $99 to have John Gruden record a Cameo message for you. $99.
So, okay, let's dissect this super quickly, because if you're a kid, up-and-coming player and a football player, and you want John Gruden to evaluate your film, not that much to do that.
That's true. That's a good point.
Less than $100.
That's a good point. Never thought about it like that, but you probably could do that, too. That's true. Scott Hansen, NFL Red Zone host, $222.
Man, not bad. You know, Scott Hansen.
It's a lot of money, man.
I love this because I love the Red Zone. And if we have him doing like a countdown for somebody's birthday or something like that, maybe it's worth it.
For you, maybe. I don't know. Let's put it this way. Who's less than Scott Hansen? How about James Worthy? $199. Jesse Palmer, host of The Bachelor. $299. For Jesse Palmer to record a message on Cameo. Dave Wannstedt, former Cowboys coach, $50 for Dave Wannstedt to get a message from Dave.
Okay.
I like it. Here's who are some of the other names that are on this list, too. Mark Grant, if anybody watches San Diego Padre games on MLB TV, he is the former Padres pitcher. His nickname is Mud, and he is $100. So, let's see who else. Gene Steratore, NFL analyst, former referee, $60. Kenny Wallace, NASCAR driver, $75. Dean Blandino, who we interviewed over at Radio Row.
For free.
$40. Let's see who else is on this that we could also talk about, too. There's plenty of them. Brad Sham, $50 for the voice of the Dallas Cowboys.
Ooh, I like that.
Linda Cohn, veteran SportsCenter anchor, one of the great people in the business, $25 for Linda Cohn.
Steal.
Let's see who else is on this group right now. We've got Merrill Hodge, $100. Did we also have Merrill Hodge with us at Radio Row?
He did not just join us on Radio Row. He helped, he helped do a bunch of stuff with us on Radio.
Yeah, Merrill Hodge was big time.
Yeah, he stuck around with the guys, I think, from laying down the law for like an hour.
I think so, too. Steve Mariucci, $160.
Okay, the Mooch, I like it. Okay.
Seth Greenberg, how much do you think he is?
I'm going to guess 80.
Good guess. Seth Greenberg, total $40.
Okay.
Goodbye there, goodbye. Chris Broussard, Fox Sports and FS1 basketball analyst, $75. Let's see who else is on this list. I'm trying to find people that are listeners. Oh, Jessica Mendoza. She was on ESPN Sunday Night Baseball, $139. Where do they get the prices? Like $222, $139. Where do people find these prices?
Yeah, I think they just kind of guesstimate. It's probably that. The obscure ones are like the 222, right? That kind of thing. I'm sure the players or the personalities themselves, they say the price. But I'm going to ask you, Steve, and maybe Alberto and Zay could chime in too. If somebody gave you a budget of $300 to use exclusively on Cameo, how would you spend something like that if you were trying to, some fun?
I got to shop. Like, I want to get as many as possible for $300. I'm not going to just go for the one $300 get. I'm going to try to find as many quality gets, like bangs for your buck for $300 total as I can get. That's me.
So would you go off the top rope, maybe get a Danny White for $180 and then surround him with some other maybe C and B list people?
I don't know. Because, I could go get myself Brian Baldinger for $75.
Ooh, nice.
Baldy's on that list. You know Boog Shami, who's also the voice of ESPN Radio Baseball for us? We always get Boog on the...
Yeah.
He's always listening, or he's always joining us on ESPN Radio. He's $75 as well.
You wouldn't go all in on one person for like 300 bucks.
Well, it depends on who that person is, but probably not. Would you?
No, I probably wouldn't. I saw Kyle Juszczyk, you know, went to the Super Bowl with the 49ers, their fullback. He's for 400 bucks, so I probably wouldn't go there. I might, you know, for personal reasons, man, I might have to go Colt McCoy, you know, number one for me, 1A in this draft right here. 150 bucks, that's a steal in my eyes. That's my childhood hero.
Michael Irvin's $500.
Oh, man, that's expensive.
It
okay.
is expensive. What about you, Alberto? Would you throw it all on one guy, or would you try to, or female, or would you spread it out?
I'd probably spread it out, try to get a couple jokes in, try to get like four or five different sound bites that I can send around and trip people out for fun, and I think that would make it worth it.
What's your cameo tip, Zay?
Honestly... I don't know. I'd search. I think I'd search for hours looking for, like, I'd spend it all on one person, but I'd search for hours looking for that one person.
Stu Gotts is $150.
Ooh, good price there.
Is it?
High demand, huh?
Is it?
Maybe. I don't think it's a good price. I think it's a good price for him. Like, he's making some money there.
That's true. Let's see who else is on this
list. Wow, Miles McBride. I mean, he played in the Eastern Conference Finals. $120. There you go, Steve. You could start it off there. New York Knicks.
That's true. I could. If I wanted to go in that regard, that's the way to do it. Aaron Andrews, $250.
Okay. We're getting there.
If you wanted Aaron Andrews to be your, to be. Bob Nightingale, who's joined us over the years, $45. For Bob Nightingale.
So every time I give him a call, it's $45.
Hey, think about that. He just recharges on, you know, when he gets it, when he's on Cameo. It's pretty impressive.
Definitely.
For this list. Let me see if there's anybody else out of the gate that would be an interesting one for a lot of our I wonder, do you think Babe Laufenberg is on this?
I don't see him so far. I think let me search a little Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, Neil Everett. ESPN Sports Center. How much for Neil Everett?
Okay, my guess is 200.
Okay. Did you already see the answer?
No, I didn't. 150?
Okay. Zay, Neil Everett.
No.
No? What does that even mean? What is that? What did you do? The answer is $99.
Okay.
I guess Zay is out on Neil Everett is what that was.
He just didn't want any Neil.
Oh. I guess that's exactly what that is.
Hey, Brandon Aubrey's $195, kicker for the Dallas Cowboys. There you go.
It's a bargain, right? That is a bargain.
Emmitt Smith, $725, oh Steve. God. That's the most expensive one I've seen so far.
How much?
$725.
Jeez. And he gets it. Oh, Arash Markazi just started.
Okay.
$24.
Steal. I love it. We got to add a little Arash there in our fantasy, cameo buildup.
There you go. I'm looking at just our former guest. That's why I thought that was kind of interesting more than anything else. But, yeah, you're right. There are definitely some pricey options, and there are some bargains. I guess it just depends on, Bill Raftery. Would you spend $200 for him to give you an onions message?
I would go with a no, but I like the idea. I'm looking at a lot of former Cowboys, by the way. Demarion Overshown, $75. Drew Pearson, $488, which is interesting. DeMarcus Ware, $500 for a personalized message. Jalen Smith, $200 there. Wade Phillips. Who's going to do this one for Wade Phillips? Like, how does that one get done?
Wish
That's $400 right there for Wade Phillips.
Who is Pooch? He is an NBA reporter. You ever heard of him?
No.
Pooch?
I got to look up a picture.
$5.
Ooh, okay.
That could be the bargain. Like when you have a little leftover money, you can use that as well. So $5, get your Pooch. All right. We're going to come back with Tim Haggerty. Wrap this one up right after. One last traffic update. Here's Charlie One.